This is the Daily Knight for Friday, January 15, 2016. The Daily Knight supports Making Biscuits Cat Rescue, a 501c3 charity. If you like this podcast, please consider making a donation or adopting a rescue cat at makingbiscuits.org. I'm your host, Gerardo San Diego, and today's show is about great actors, including Shakespearean actors, acting in geeky superhero and blockbuster movies. If you're a geek and you like these superhero comic book, graphic novel movies, chances are you've run into people, they may even be your friends, who are, I hate to say this, but they kind of look down on you because you're not watching real movies, right? So they're kind of, you know, turning their nose up at you, sort of thing. So like your snooty art film friends. Another one is like, let's say there's a cute girl or a guy you want to impress, and they're sort of into Shakespeare or these little indie films with great acting, but, you know, not many special effects or explosions. It's surprising how many blockbuster superhero movies have Shakespearean actors in them, Shakespearean influences, and especially the good ones. Shakespeare's everywhere to begin with, in terms of story themes and the hero's journey. Just as there's Homer, Homer's Odyssey, with the story arcs with heroes. Heroes, superheroes, same thing. Shakespeare has them also. There's comedy and tragedy, and there's, you'd be surprised how many superhero blockbuster film directors pay homage to Shakespeare in their movies, and sometimes it's directly to Shakespeare. But just off the top of my head is Kenneth Branagh directing Thor, the Avengers movie. That's Shakespearean, you know, the Norse gods. That's as Shakespeare as you can get in terms of superheroes. I spent a lot of time on this list, by the way. I'm also going to talk about Star Wars actors who did Shakespeare on stage or in film. A bunch of them. If they got a British accent, there's a good chance they did Shakespeare, because that's one of the training grounds for an up-and-coming actor in the UK, is join a Shakespeare troupe. Go on the road, go on, do little plays, do a BBC film that is a Shakespeare, based off a Shakespeare play or a Shakespeare play. So, and then I'm going to talk about other actors who have done not just Shakespeare plays, but also great acting films that after a while, we don't even realize that they're doing these acting films when they're also doing superhero movies. So it's a good mix. It's also a good introduction to watching movies and TV shows that are not just superheroes, because life is bigger than that. We can't just do superheroes or Star Wars all the time, because these movies, these superhero movies and Star Wars movies, are not insular. They're not contained within the superhero science fiction fantasy genre. They have a bunch of Shakespearean influences infused in them. You know, Alec Guinness in Star Wars, he elevated that movie, just putting him in there. That's why they had to put Ewan McGregor as the younger Obi-Wan in the prequel movies, because he has had this amazing acting career even before the prequels started. So I'm going to get into that. And also, well, basically think of this show as your kind of Cliff's Notes to Shakespeare. If you've never watched a Shakespeare play or a movie, I'm going to try to take it as easy as possible, because I'm sort of the same way. It's like, I don't want to get bored. Shakespeare to me is boring. But if you know what to look for, if you know where to go, what movies to watch to kind of introduce you into Shakespeare, get you excited about the whole, not just Shakespeare, it's all the whole acting universe. Make it fun for yourself. And let's see, Shakespeare movies that won't bore you too much. I'm going to talk about that. Merchant Ivory type movies that won't bore you too much. Merchant Ivory is, in a nutshell, it is those Sense and Sensibility, Remains of the Day type movies. A lot of talking. It's like one step away from Shakespeare, but not too far, because it's a whole lot of talking for an hour and a half, 2 hours. But if you can find the right ones, at least you will be able to say, hey, you know what? I've seen half a dozen of these acting films, and I can sort of relate to how they apply to superhero movies. How this kind of talent actually makes a superhero movie better. I can't wait until the Doctor Strange movie comes out. It's full of these Shakespearean slash acting actors. It's going to elevate that movie, guaranteed. So let me clear my throat. But first things first, we need to remember, pay homage to, recognize the greatness of two notable people who passed away this last week, David Bowie and Alan Rickman. David Bowie, everybody knows who David Bowie is. David Bowie is so ingrained into popular culture that you don't even know when you're experiencing his work until after the fact. You know, did you see Guardians of the Galaxy? His song is in there. When they went into the big city that's inside a huge skull, that was his song. If you saw the movie The Martian, the turning point of the movie where Mark Watney has finally contacted Earth, and Earth is doing its best. JPL program is doing its best to build a rescue a vessel for Mark Watney, communicating with him back on Mars. And then the Ares 3 crew that unknowingly left Mark Watney alive on Mars is also getting their stuff together. And then they have the Chinese space program working together. When everybody's working together and it seems like things are finally looking up, they play David Bowie's Starman music, and they play it from beginning to end, and I think it's probably 3 or 4 minutes. Beautiful segment. It makes you feel good. And that was a pivotal point in the movie. It was also an optimistic point of the movie. Makes you feel good. So okay, I am checking my recording. It looks like it's recording okay, so I'm going to keep going. I'm still trying to get over this thing, this winter congestion thing that's going on. So I'm going to go out of the mic and clear my throat from time to time and drink from my water. Okay, here we go. David Bowie, The Man Who Fell to Earth. That was the very first movie that I saw David Bowie in. And I was a kid. I remember seeing it with my parents because we had... This was back in the day, even before cable TV, if you can believe that ever existed. So we had like, what, 12 channels on TV? 2, 4, 5... 7, 9, 11, 13, and then a UHF set of channels, but mostly it's channel 52. It's like channel 28 and channel 52, so there's like not even a dozen channels. And then all of a sudden this thing called On TV came out. If you're as old as I am, you'll remember On TV and Select TV. So you get this little black box, you put it on your TV, you plug it in through the old weird switcher thingy. This is when TV still had antennas, if you can remember that far back. And the you put this box on your TV, and the box had one channel on TV, and you paid like $20 a month for one channel. It's almost like HBO is right now. But HBO, you get this box, and you get this box of digital content and your cable box, and you get like hundreds of channels, plus HBO, plus Showtime, Cinemax, Stars, ESPN, blah, blah, blah. Back then, we had less than a dozen channels and on TV. So, wow, that was a long story. Sorry. The Man Who Fell to Earth came on TV because you kind of, and this is before DVR where you can just record shows and watch them later. No, when it's on, you have to get the whole family together and then stick your faces in front of the TV and watch what's going on. So The Man Who Fell to Earth, I only saw it once, but it had such an impact on me because it was one of these art films, an independent movie with a small budget. And I just remember how David Bowie is an alien who comes down to Earth. I think Candy Clark was in the movie. She was the female protagonist. And what I remember from that movie is how artistic and beautiful the movie looked. And also how his eyes are two different colors. His right eye is blue and his left eye is brown, David Bowie's. It's hard to describe. It's like seeing 2001: A Space Odyssey for the first time. I would compare those two. Plus, what's the other one? A Clockwork Orange, Stanley Kubrick. You don't want to watch all three of those movies back to back to back, especially if you have the flu. It's like they're trippy. So, I want to watch The Man Who Fell to Earth again. So I think it's a worthwhile movie. And it really shows, it was an introduction to David Bowie. It was still way back when. I think that was still like in the late 70s or early 80s. But the memorable movie that I saw David Bowie in, what I remember him the most, is in Basquiat. The movie, it's a sort of a, like a biopic, a factual biopic about the artist Jean-Baptiste Basquiat. I think that's his name. He's a modern contemporary artist who died tragically. I think it was a drug overdose. Not unusual for an artist that is almost ahead of his time. So the movie is about Basquiat, but David Bowie's role in it is as Andy Warhol. And what amazed me, I was watching this movie, I'm going, okay, what? I was watching it during my college years. And during college years, you can either experiment with drugs, with sex, or a mixture of both, and probably will watch the weirdest set of movies that you will ever watch in your lifetime in a very small space of time. So I was watching art films, I was watching Kurosawa movies, Alfred Hitchcock movies, the classics, Frank Capra stuff, and also all these foreign art films, including this one. I think it was shot in New York, though. I think it is an American movie, the Basquiat, but when Andy Warhol comes in there, only after the movie was over and I saw the credits rolling did I realize it was David Bowie. I mean, that's how much he disappeared into the role. And it, don't expect much, but go watch Basquiat. Basquiat. Art film, small film, independent. That's right. David Bowie also did the haunting, haunting song, This Is Not America. From The Falcon and the Snowman. It's a movie with Sean Penn and Timothy Hutton way back in the 80s, I think. And they are military computer analysts. They have high-level access to military secrets. Sean Penn and Timothy Hutton's roles, their characters, and they're not making enough money in their jobs, or they kind of feel like they were left out. So they start stealing government secrets, government documents, and data, and selling it to the Russians by meeting in Mexico. They have a meeting place in Mexico, and of course, they get in trouble sooner or later, and you know, bad things happen. It never ends well in this type of movie, and it is based on a actual story. So look that up: The Falcon and the Snowman with Sean Penn and Timothy Hutton. But the very end theme, when basically, I'm not going to tell you the ending, but you know, nothing good happened. But the end theme is David Bowie's "This Is Not America," and it made an impression on me so much that I would find myself humming that song, like while I'm driving out of nowhere. I'll just, "This is not America, no." That's my best David Bowie impression. If you want to see a better one, go check out Craig Ferguson. You know, Late Show with Craig Ferguson. He does the funniest David Bowie impression. So nothing but praise for David Bowie. Actually, you know what? I didn't grow up listening to his music like a lot of people did. I'm kind of late into the game, and I can see myself just putting on his albums, just having a playlist on like Spotify or, you know, my Google Play Music account. So I will be doing that probably right after this this podcast, after I'm done recording. Plus his latest album, Black Star, was almost prophetic. It came out 2 days before his death, and from what I've read, that he actually was not planning. He didn't think he was going to die so soon after the album was released, and he had another album that he wanted to record. Chances are, if you care about David Bowie, you have already researched and read all the articles online about him. He will be missed, I think, more now. I think his death is like when John Lennon died back in the 70s, is people appreciated him more after he died, sort of like Van Gogh. So, and then the other one, this hit me harder because I have been following Alan Rickman, his work, ever since Hans Gruber in the original Die Hard movie. He was the perfect elitist European snob, narcissistic terrorist bad guy. You couldn't make him more hateable in the Die Hard movie than any other villain. The way Bruce Willis defeated his character in the movie was so cathartic. But at the same time, it's like he did it so well, and he did it over the top to where, you know, it's like, okay, this actor has more to offer us. He's not just Hans Gruber. And boy, did he prove himself. He's Severus Snape in the Harry Potter movies, among other whole bunch of other roles that he would just disappear into. He would have a British accent or an American accent or a different accent. And he was almost a chameleon, but his voice is so unique that you kind of know it's him. But you expect, okay, what's he going to do next? What is Alan Rickman going to do next? So I'm going to focus on the two movies, the two movies that really made an impact on me that he was in. And Harry Potter, yeah, I love it. I love his Severus Snape in Harry Potter. But the other one that I really made an impression on me was his Colonel Brandon character in Sense and Sensibility. That is one of these acting movies with Kate Winslet and Emma Thompson. I think it's a Merchant Ivory movie, officially. It's set in the UK, of course. And Colonel Brandon, which Alan Rickman's character, is... he has a crush on Kate Winslet's character. What's her name? Marianne. But Kate Winslet has a crush on... what's his name? The good-looking UK guy. Let me look up real quick. Bear with me. I'm typing insensibil. I can't spell sensibility. IMDb. As soon as I type this, I didn't know Ang Lee directed Sense and Sensibility. Hugh Grant, Mr. Cute Shoes. So Kate Winslet's character has a crush on Hugh Grant's character. They fall in love, and then Hugh Grant, because he's an asshole, he betrays her trust and her love and then leaves her all alone. And here comes Colonel Brandon, Alan Rickman, to the rescue. If I were to recommend one of these Merchant Ivory movies that, in my opinion, isn't that boring, I would recommend you watch Sense and Sensibility. If you have a date night and your date wants to see a romantic comedy and you can't come up with a title that you don't abhor, recommend putting on Sense and Sensibility on the a TV, or if it's in the theater, in a small theater, go watch it. It's pretty good. It goes by pretty fast, and enough things happen in that movie to where, you know, hopefully you don't get bored. And if you get bored, my apologies in advance. So Alan Rickman is Colonel Brandon, and the other movie that really made an impact on me was Alan Rickman again in Something the Lord Made. So let me click on this, because it's a Johns Hopkins Hospital. It was the, let's see, Alfred Blalock. Alan Rickman plays Alfred Blalock, the surgeon who is famous for being the Blue Baby Doctor. He pioneered modern heart surgery. I'm reading the Wikipedia page right now.
Sorry.
Okay, that was not a dramatic pause. Got something stuck in my throat. So, if you've ever heard of the big word, Tetralogy of Fallot, Tetralogy of Fallot, Fallot, sounds French. It's when it's a heart disease that happens a lot in newborns and, you know, little children, toddlers. I know a little bit about this because of my other persona. I actually make websites, and I'm a web consultant, and I specialize in making medical websites. So I've been working with my client for, 10 years now, 15, 20 years, making heart disease websites and surgery websites. So I've had to research a whole bunch of this. So, okay, back. The blue baby syndrome is when not enough oxygenated blood gets to the bloodstream. And when blood does not have oxygen in it, it loses its color. And when it goes through the veins, it looks like it's blue. So, and the baby who isn't getting enough oxygen, it gets a blue color. So Alan Rickman's character, which this is a true story, Alfred Blalock, he was pioneering this technique to fix the hearts with the defects, heart defects. And he takes in Vivian Thomas, Now, Vivian is a girl's name, and they mention that in the movie, but it's a guy. And it's Mos Def, of all people. Mos Def, M-O-S-D-E-F. He's a rapper, right? I'm old, so I'm kind of... But great actor. Great, understated actor. And in this movie, and keep in mind, this is... When did this happen? This is way back when there was still segregation. 1941, my goodness. There was still racial segregation in the hospitals, in the world, in America. And Alfred Blalock takes in this an assistant. He wasn't even a doctor because African Americans didn't, they were being blocked. You know, it was society back then. If you were an African American, you did not become a doctor because the path to that occupation just wasn't available to you, and there was still segregation and prejudice. So Vivian Thomas, he read all the books. He was great. He had ideas. He helped Dr. Blalock pioneer these procedures, create custom tools, instruments, an apparatus to grow their practice at the Johns Hopkins Hospital into this pioneering thing. If you look up Something the Lord Made, look it up on Wikipedia, it'll lead you to all these great true stories about these two men. What I love about Alan Rickman in this movie is he was just playing the surgeon, the doctor. He wasn't being Alan Rickman. Downplay of his a lot of times over the top characters showed how good this guy is. And from what I heard, he's a nice guy in real life. I mean, a really genuinely decent, kind person in real life. And yeah, Alan Rickman. And you can almost feel that in this movie. I mean, at the very beginning, he shows signs of being bigoted also, because that's how it was back then. But you can tell there's a hint of compassion and open-minded with this doctor. And of course, Vivian Thomas, the Mos Def character, won him over very quickly with his ideas, with his professionalism. It's a celebratory movie, in my opinion. I think if you guys know about baseball, the Jackie Robinson story, about how Jackie Robinson broke into the Major League Baseball, first black player to play Major League Baseball. This is the medical version of that story. Those would be two good double feature movies, Jackie Robinson, the 42 movie with Harrison Ford, of all things. Watched 42 and then Something the Lord Made. Great movies. But and Alan Rickman is at the heart, pun intended, at the heart of Something the Lord Made. I think Vivian Thomas was the Mos Def character. Mos Def was the spark, but Alan Rickman was the foundation. So I can't say enough good things about Alan Rickman. And oh my goodness, I didn't get to his Sense and Sensibility. My favorite quote is, this is what I tweeted right when I heard that he died. In Sense and Sensibility, Kate Winslet's character was so heartbroken about Hugh Grant dumping her and all that stuff that she goes out in the rain and gets herself sick, and she just wants to die because she's heartbroken. And of course, her whole family is concerned about her. They don't know where she is. So Colonel Brandon, Alan Rickman's character, goes out into the huge backyards that they had back then in the middle of the rain, and he finds her, and he carries her all the way out, you know, in the way out you know, probably a mile away, carries her back to the house, and she's sick, and the doctor puts her in a room, and Kate Winslet, and they're, you know, they're waiting to see if she gets better or does she get worse and die. And Alan Rickman is outside the door waiting for what'll happen next, and it's driving him crazy. So he goes to Emma Thompson. Emma Thompson is the older sister of Kate Winslet's character. And his famous quote is, "Give me an occupation, Miss Dashwood, or I shall run mad." Because he's so worried about Kate Winslet and being sick and not knowing what to do next. And he just needed something to do. And I love that phrase and the way Alan Rickman portrayed it was one of the moments in that movie. There's another great moment with Kate Winslet. Oh yeah, with Emma Thompson later on, where Sense of Sensibility. It's funny. It's like my five listeners will go put on Sense of Sensibility, will get absolutely bored, and then will never listen to me again. That would be funny and tragic at the same time. So I'm sorry in advance. Don't stop listening to me because, you know, my five. I may have more than five listeners, but I'm gonna keep saying five until I actually figure out this whole podcasting metric thing. I'm trying to do my best. But the best thing I could do is just be excited about something, talk about it, record it, and have you guys listen to it. And again, thank you for listening to me, blah, blah. I'm just like a third through this podcast. But I'm so excited about heartbroken as well as want to celebrate both David Bowie and Alan Rickman that I just keep talking. So, all right. Bless them. They're both in hopefully they're both in better places. And moment of silence. All right, so quickie Star Wars news. This just dropped this morning. Star Wars Rebels mid-season trailer. I have a link to it on my website, thedailynight.net, thedailynightwithk.net. Amazing trailer. The Star Wars Rebels is an animated program on Disney XD channel, and it's gonna come back next week, looks like. But they have a preview trailer of what we should expect for the rest of the season. Just go watch it. It'll blow your mind. Blue colored tri-saber. Like Kylo Ren's in The Force Awakens. Ezra going dark with a new dark master. We don't know who he is. It looks like he has like Darth Maul type paint on his face, but he's hooded. The first time I saw it, I watched the trailer three times. It's only like 3 minutes long. The Ezra's new master, dark master, he kind of looks like Darth Maul, but I keep thinking, is that Supreme Leader Snoke in disguise? So and Yoda is in the trailer, so we're gonna get to see Yoda in real life, not just a voice, not like last season. We're gonna see Darth Vader, and we're gonna see Darth Vader fighting Ahsoka Tano, that big fight. There's the Inquisitors are there, but yeah, go watch the trailer. I have the link on the website. Now, about this podcast title, if you're wondering, bless you for already getting the play on words, play on phrase. But the title of this podcast is Now is the Summer Blockbuster of Our Discontent. It's based on the first line of Richard III. That's Shakespeare. The Richard III play is, the first line is, "Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this son of York." So I switched some of the words around. And there you go. I'm going to talk about Ian McKellen as Richard III later on. So, okay. By the way, if you have any questions, my contact information is all over the place. Go to the website. If you're listening to this podcast on your mobile device. There's links to how to contact me. If you have any questions, send me a message, and then one of these days we'll have a Q&A. And actually, if you want to ask me something, ask away. Probably the best way is go to the Facebook page for The Daily Knight, and then just put a comment on there, and then I'll compile the questions and then have a Q&A episode soon. Okay, all right. So, I almost forgot to add this, but then when I started researching it, I was amazed. Star Wars actors who also did Shakespeare on stage or in film. One of the strengths of Star Wars, in my opinion, is how many Shakespearean actors they have as strong characters, as integral in the movie. Even in very, very small roles, they have very strong actors. The AT-AT commander, General Veers, and you see him twice in the movie, three times. You see him once in the Star Destroyer, and then another time with his helmet on as commanding the lead AT-AT that blows up the Rebel shield generator. His name is Julian Glover. Just that little moment in Empire Strikes Back, and this dude, he could easily be the leading man, and he probably was, but we just don't know it. You know, not in terms of blockbuster movies, but he, in addition to being General Veers, he was also the main bad guy in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. When Indiana Jones had to drink the chalice of life, the Holy Grail. Remember that scene? He chose wisely. Remember that scene? All right. So the he chose poorly. The guy who drank and turned into dust within like half a minute. That's General Veers from Empire Strikes Back, Julian Glover. So Wikipedia or IMDb, his bio, and you'll see him, and he was in a whole bunch of other movies. So that's Julian Glover. We all know Sir Alec Guinness. Everybody knows. You take Obi-Wan, you take Alec Guinness out of A New Hope, and it is not nowhere near as lofty a movie as it has become in terms of a classic. Obi-Wan Kenobi, Sir Alec Guinness, his lines in A New Hope, his set of lines are probably more memorable than any other characters in A New Hope, easily, right? From mind-tricking the stormtrooper to talking to Han Solo, who's the more foolish, the fool or who the fool who follows him. And a lot of those lines I read were ad-libbed by Alec Guinness, who read the original script written by George Lucas and said, it's too complicated, we need to simplify it, and we need to add a certain rhythm so it flows better. And because Alec Guinness is a Shakespearean actor, he knows about iambic pentameter, about rhythm, tempo, hitting the right beats, again, to repeat the phrase that a lot of people are saying right now. The delivery of a line. You can't just say a sentence. You have to deliver it. Just like in music, you have to do the right... I'm snapping my finger now. Like that. So, Sir Alec Guinness, nothing but good. Another one is James Earl Jones. Even though he's only the voice of Darth Vader in the Star Wars movies, he had to deliver it a certain way. He had to, if you've seen James Earl Jones' other movies where it's more like comedy, he delivers his lines differently than when he's Darth Vader. He was the main bad guy in Conan the Barbarian with Arnold Schwarzenegger, the very first Conan movie. It's a different delivery. And how does he know how to deliver is James Earl Jones did Shakespeare. He did Othello, King Lear, Midsummer Night's Dream, Measure for Measure, and Hamlet, among others. If you Google or if you Wikipedia or actually IMDb, most of the British actors who starred in Star Wars movies, chances are you'll run into them doing a role in a Shakespeare play or a movie. I had to stop after a while. I was compiling these lists, and it's like, wow, it's like all if they have a British accent, they did Shakespeare. So, and of course, fan favorite Ian McDiarmid, the Emperor. I'm just going to read what Wikipedia said. McDiarmid is renowned for his work in British theater, having won plaudits as an actor and director from a wide variety of sources. He has starred in a variety of Shakespeare plays, including Hamlet, The Tempest, Much Ado About Nothing, Macbeth, Merchant of Venice, King Lear, Timon of Athens, and he's funny and fun. So if you ever wondered why some people say he is the best thing to come out of, he has the strongest acting performance in terms of the whole prequel series, this is why. He's got a lot of Shakespeare experience. So, and Clive Reavil, he was the original Emperor that was the hologram in Empire Strikes Back, the original edition. He's also in a whole bunch of other BBC shows and the horror movies. He did a lot of Shakespeare too. Twelfth Night, Hamlet, Love's Labor Was Lost, The Merchant of Venice, Julius Caesar, and The Tempest, among others. Clive Reavil, he's also, if you've ever listened to the NPR's presentation of the Empire Strikes Back, or I think either Star Wars or the Empire Strikes Back radio broadcast. This was back in the, I think it was the late 80s. And on weekends, they would broadcast the Star Wars, like weekly. You would get like an hour. Clive Reavil voiced one of the other actors. He wasn't the Emperor, but he was a voice actor back then. Back before animation, back before the big stars did animation, they also did radio. So let me turn my light on. Actually, give me 5 seconds. I'm going to turn the light on. Can't see. Back to the mic. Hopefully I'm not boring you. And if I am, I'm sorry. Let's see. There's a whole bunch of others. Star Wars actors that did Shakespeare. Gwendolyn Christie. Dennis Lawson, who was Wedge. Don Henderson, which was General Tag. And you can tell by his performance in A New Hope that he had some good acting chops. And even John Boyega, I added him. It's cute. He has the lead in Othello, but it was in a college play. But you know what? You got to start somewhere. I think John Boyega, he's going places. Now here's the big guns. Big guns. Of course, you have Sir Patrick Stewart and Sir Ian McKellen in terms of acting, but also super duper geeky. They love the fans. And they are great ambassadors for the geeky superhero comic book science fiction fantasy genre. Is these two guys, and they're everywhere, right? It's like you see them on Twitter hamming it up all the time. So Patrick Stewart, the first time I saw him was actually in Excalibur, a John Boorman movie, way back. I think it was like the early 80s. And he was very, very young. He was like in his 20s. And he was one of the knights. He had a bit role. and then he just kind of worked his way up. But if you ever watch, it's the Excalibur is about the King Arthur. It's a very artistic, impressionistic movie, kind of a mind trip. But if you ever watch it, the Excalibur movie, keep an eye out on Patrick Stewart in there. Yeah, I think he rides a horse also. So, Patrick Stewart has won the Tony Award for Macbeth, Primetime Emmy Award, and Laurence Olivier for doing Hamlet. And that's just his Shakespeare stuff. Two Star Trek The Next Generation episodes with Patrick Stewart. I always recommend this. These are my two favorite Star Trek episodes ever. One is called The Inner Light, where people call it the flute episode, where Picard, his mind experiences a whole lifetime of this other person from a world that has already died, but he is reliving the life of this scientist. And the whole episode is you know, Picard has with a different persona, and at the very end he plays the flute, and it people get weepy, especially geeks like me. One of my favorite episodes. That's The Inner Light, Star Trek: The Next Generation. The other one was Chain of Command, also Star Trek: The Next Generation. It's the Darmok and Jelata Tanagra. Darmok and Tanagra. Actually, you know what? No. That's another one. That's the third one. Chain of Command is the There Are Four Lights episode where the Kardashians take over or capture Picard, and they try to brainwash him, but he doesn't break. And at the very end, he goes, There Are Four Lights. And that was like, you know, it's a big kind of a meme going on right now. But let me add this. What is that episode with Darmok? That's Darmok is Picard going on a planet, and he has to communicate through metaphor, which is a great crossover with you have the current language mixed with almost like a Homerian mythological language. Darmok and Jelata Tanagra, Temba, his arms wide open. Everything is a metaphor. And it's very much like when we read Hercules or Perseus or the Zeus stories from, you know, when you're back in school and you had to read these Homer's Odyssey type books. Very much like that. Wonderful episode. It's got Paul Winfield as his a partner on the planet, where they kind of play off each other. They're both commanders of ships, but they have to understand each other through metaphor. Amazing. So I guess I have three favorite Star Trek Next Generation episodes. They all involve Patrick Stewart. A lot of acting and crying. At least on my part. And then, oh, of course, X-Men Days of Future Past. Amazing. An older Professor Xavier. Trying to keep things together. And, of course, those who are into Christmas plays and kind of stage musicals. There was a time, I don't know if he's still doing it right now, but Patrick Stewart went around the world and did a one-man show of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, a one-man play. And I think my cousin saw it, and she said it was fantastic. Imagine him doing like two dozen, three dozen characters just by himself on stage himself. Anybody could do that. You put him in a movie, it'll be like, you know, it'll be easy for him. And then, I did see the TV show, the Christmas Carol TV film. That was back in the 90s. Also excellent. So that's Sir Patrick Stewart. He's also a good guy. If you see the YouTube videos of him, you'll admire his kindness and compassion to people. And the fans love him, and he loves the fans back. Let me see. I'm scrolling down. Ian McKellen as Magneto and Gandalf in X-Men and Lord of the Rings. This dude has 6 Laurence Olivier Awards. When you hear me say Laurence Olivier, if you don't know, Laurence Olivier was the, who would he be? The Robert De Niro and Al Pacino of that time, back in the, was it 40s and 50s and 60s? If there was an actor that you want to get it right, you got Laurence Olivier. Look him up. In terms of what actor we have now that is like him, I would say not Benedict Cumberbatch. Cumberbatch has a bunch of, he's going to get there one day, but he's not there yet. It's also a British actor. You got to go to the British. And I really think British actors, because they have Shakespearean training, they are much more equipped to shine and to elevate a movie than non-Shakespearean trained actors. Just my opinion. So, Ian McKellen, now his non-geeky superhero movies, he did Richard III, which has that famous line that I said earlier, "Now is the winter of our discontent." He plays it's like a Nazi era fictional scenario. And he is Richard III. He is a malformed human who kind of hates everybody because he's not having a good time. So he plots to get rid of people and to take over the world, you know, kind of a megalomaniac. Good role. Kind of boring, though. I think I've watched the first half of it. Annette Bening is in it. The Richard III Ian McKellen movie. If you can sit through the whole movie, good on you. Let me see. Ian McKellen also did Richard III. Richard II, Macbeth. Iago in Othello. That's a kind of interesting character. If what was it, Othello? If you watch the Kenneth Branagh version of Othello with Lawrence Fishburne as the title character, because Othello is he's of the Moors. He's African descent, black guy, and which is kind of progressive for Shakespeare when you think about it. I mean, you know, Othello is the Moors. He's dark-skinned, and he puts him into this European setting. But Iago in Othello is the sleazy, manipulating, backstabbing character in Othello. And it's in most plays, you want to be the lead actor. Like in Hamlet, you want to be Hamlet. In Macbeth, you want to be Macbeth. King Lear, you want to be King Lear. Henry V, you want to be Henry V. In Othello, you want to be Iago, I-A-G-O. It is a juicy character. And in the Kenneth Branagh movie, Kenneth Branagh was the Iago, and it was fun to watch him be sleazy. You know what? Here's a crossover in Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, Wormtongue? Yeah, Wormtongue. Is the Iago of the Lord of the Rings movies. So you go Wormtongue, Greybeard. Well, you know what I'm talking about. Wormtongue. He finally gets his comeuppance in Return of the King, the special edition. So there you go. All right. So now here's a bulleted list. Maybe I'll skip some of these, but if you go to the website, you'll see the list. Geek movie actors in acting roles. Acting roles. Kenneth Branagh, we already know. Henry V, I've included a video on the website of the end theme of the movie. But go if you're going to watch any Shakespeare movie, if you've never watched any Shakespeare movie, and you're only going to watch one, and especially if you have sort of a short attention span, I would recommend go watch Henry V. the Kenneth Branagh version. And skip over, you can actually kind of skip over some of the parts that feel boring to you. Just cut to the part where Kenneth Branagh starts doing speeches and he starts getting pissed at people. It's fun. It's fun because he gets betrayed, but he also discovers the betrayals and he makes those guys pay for it. And the way, it's almost like getting reprimanded by your principal when you're a little kid and you just want to poop your pants. When he reprimands, now keep in mind, Henry V, they call him Harry in the movie. Harry is the all-powerful British king, but he is not getting respect from the older people because he is a younger guy. He's not getting respect from France. So they're always insulting him. And, you know, the insults lead to war. And there's also betrayal and, you know, his own men, a couple of them betray him by selling secrets to the enemy. And when he gets pissed, when Kenneth Branagh gets pissed, it's fun to watch. So Henry V. And if you want to get kind of like snooty, snotty about it, say, oh, I watched Henry V. Don't say Henry V. Say, Henry V. I like Henry V more than Richard III. That's how the you know, the high lofty people who can pay, you know, $150 dinners for a little bite-sized pieces with a little, you know, sauce smears on it. Okay, all right, now I'm going off. All right, so Kenneth Branagh, Henry V. And if Henry V is too heavy for you, watch Much Ado About Nothing, which is a comedy. It's lighthearted. Denzel Washington is in it. It's also directed by Kenneth Branagh. He sort of did these, his tetralogy of Shakespeare movies that are watchable. The first one is Henry V, and then he did Much Ado About Nothing, and then he did Hamlet, and then he did Othello with Lawrence Fishburne. So let me, Henry V, Hamlet, Much Ado About Nothing. I'm going to add this Othello with Lawrence Fishburne. All right. So, yeah, Shakespeare, Kenneth Branagh. And the cool part is he's going to be in Thor. I think he's also going to direct the new Thor movie, Ragnarok. So, yay. Tom Hiddleston, speaking of Thor, Tom Hiddleston, who is Loki in the Thor movies and the Avengers movies, he did a Henry V version, which was on TV on PBS. It's called The Hollow Crown, Henry V, Henry V. And it's a more subdued, it's closer to being a stage play than the Kenneth Branagh Henry V. But it's also worth watching because you get to see Tom Hiddleston, Loki, in a different scenario as a Shakespearean actor, as opposed to just being a, you know, superhero bad guy. Fun to watch. It's good. If you have time to watch these movies, I suggest you watch them because it will enrich you. And it's also, all you got to do is watch them once and you'll have those movies now under your belt, your proverbial belt. So you can bring them out. If, you know, your snooty friends want to talk about these art films, hey, you know what? I saw The Hollow Crown. So there, Henry V. I saw two versions of Henry V. I saw the Kenneth Branagh version, and I saw the Tom Hiddleston version. And you do the compare and contrast. You know, Kenneth Branagh was more brash. Tom Hiddleston was more subdued. But he was also less of a fighty Henry V compared to Kenneth Branagh. And the Exeter, Uncle Exeter, was more pronounced in the Kenneth Branagh version. Stuff like that. You just, you know, make yourself sound good. So, all right, next. By the way, did I put this in here? I'll talk about it later. The big fight scene, the big battle in Henry V, the Kenneth Branagh Henry V is amazing. I'll talk about that later. Jennifer Lawrence, I got to get through this. I'm not going to finish within an hour. I think we're past the hour already. So Jennifer Lawrence, everybody knows who Jennifer Lawrence is now. X-Men, Hunger Games, and American Hustle. Watch American Hustle for her role in it. If you want to see diversity And if you've seen her in X-Men already as Mystique and or The Hunger Games, watch American Hustle and you'll see a totally different type of Jennifer Lawrence that's just as enjoyable. She is nuts in American Hustle. And so is Christian Bale is also in American Hustle. And you got to see his character. He's got a receding hairline and a paunch. I don't know if that was padding or if Christian Bale actually gained a lot of pounds for that. Those two together, it's amazing. It's like Mystique and Bruce Wayne are in this 70s movie. You know, Brown Chicka Bow Wow, you know, 70s movie. So, all right. Speaking of 70s movies, Ben Affleck. What does Ben Affleck have to do with 70s movies? Well, if you see the Argo, it is about back in the 70s, there were journalists, I think they were CIA agents, that were trapped in Iran that had to be rescued. And the American government had to figure out how to sneak in a group of people into Iran and pretend that they are making a movie. So they contact Ben Affleck, and he puts together a team to pretend that they are a movie production team that's going to shoot a science fiction movie in, I'm hoping I get this, it is in Iran, right? In Iran. Iranian embassy, and so they sneak these people out. If it sounds boring, you might get bored. I don't know. It won best movie in the Oscars of that year. Argo. And of course, you know, Ben Affleck is going to be the next Batman, and another great movie of Ben Affleck. And he, but by the way, he directed Argo and this other movie, The Town. And it's about some bank robbers in Boston. Great movie, fantastic ending. And after I saw, before they announced that Ben Affleck was going to be the next Batman, I had already seen The Town and Argo. And as soon as I heard the news that Ben Affleck is going to be the next Batman, I had no problems with it. If I had not seen The Town and Argo, I might have had problems with Ben Affleck being Batman because I still had the taste of the Daredevil movie in my mouth. But not anymore. This guy can do the job. And he's directing. And I heard he's directing the next Batman movie. So, speaking of Batman, Michael Keaton, the original movie Batman. He was awesome. Nobody thought Michael Keaton could pull it off as Bruce Wayne, but he's just nutty enough to be able to do it. But if you want to see two other standout performances, now keep in mind all the stuff that I'm telling you right now, it's from my own experience. And whenever I recommend a movie, it's because I loved it or liked it a lot. Not because it is generally the best movie or the most notable movie. It's just because it influenced me. It made an impression on me personally. So take everything I say with a grain of salt, but keep listening. Michael Keaton, the three movies I listed was Birdman, Batman, and The Paper. You've probably never heard of The Paper. It's Michael Keaton as a journalist trying to knock down a story, get the scoop on a story that he himself believes is being misreported, contrary to what every other newspaper in the town believes it to be. And it takes place in a 24-hour period, and they emphasize that in the movie. Ron Howard directed it. It's got Marissa Tomei, great performance by, what's his name? Hold on. I hate dead air, by the way. That's why I just keep talking, even though I sometimes do too much blah, blah. Oh, Robert Duvall. Mr. Robert Duvall. So it's Michael Keaton, Glenn Close, Marissa Tomei, Randy Quaid, and Robert Duvall in The Paper. Good movie. It's a bit 1980s, feel to it, but in terms of it just fast paced. It just keeps going. It's a lot of talky-talky. So, now we switch. Hey, check it out. I actually listed three Americans, and no British accent. Jennifer Lawrence, Ben Affleck, and Michael Keaton. They're all American. No British accent. Now we're back to the British accent. Paul Bettany. Everybody knows him now as the Vision in Avengers Age of Ultron. He is also Jarvis, the voice of Jarvis, Iron Man, Tony Stark's computer. But Paul Bettany, he's sort of a chameleon. If you've seen the Da Vinci Code, he was the, the albino monk. With the Cilice strap, he would punish you, sort of like a masochistic religious terrorist zealot in Da Vinci Code. Great role, but the role that I really admire him for was Master and Commander. What's the Gladiator guy? Commander, what's his name? Russell Crowe. So, in Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World, Russell Crowe and Paul Bettany are buddies on a ship. They are like the number one and two command on, sort of. Russell Crowe is the captain of the ship. Paul Bettany is the chief surgeon on the ship. This is back in the old sailing ships. What is it? This is like the 1800s clipper ships. And their dialogue between the two of them, beautiful. I could just sit there and listen to them talk. I don't even have to watch the movie. Beautiful, rich dialogue. And you could tell that whatever Paul Bettany, whenever he opens his freaking mouth, it's like ear candy. I mean, a lot of these, they're also ear candy, but Paul Bettany, it's like this. You just savor it, you know. When Paul Bettany, when you hear Jarvis talking, it's just fun to listen to, right? He's got that great voice. He's also, he doesn't take himself seriously in terms of his fame. So he does all these weird little roles. He also does big roles. But the great thing about it is you can't really typecast him in anything. You know, he'll do that Harrison Ford, the goofy, what is it, like a techie movie. I forgot what the name is, with Harrison Ford. He was good in it too. So Paul Bettany, Avengers Age of Ultron, Da Vinci Code, Master and Commander of the Far Side of the World. I would recommend Master and Commander of the Far Side of the World if you're in a mood, kind of a guy mood, because it's a very guy movie. And you want to feel like you're on a sailing ship back in the old days where they had pirates and, you know, the colonial battles between France and the UK in the sea, and a whole bunch of technical stuff. Like, what would you do if your ship, a good part of your ship got blown up? How do you fix your ship and still keep sailing? What if the you know, one of the main masts got blown away by a cannonball shot? How do you, you know, strap all the ropes together and get all the men together? What happens to your wounded men? You're stuck at sea and you got to amputate an arm because it's going to get infected because it just got, you know, buckshot in it. Great stuff. Kind of bloody, and, you know, but it's recommended movie, Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World. Now we get to Benedict Cumberbatch. I'm going to type this in. I just started watching Sherlock on BBC Network with Benedict Cumberbatch. What else can you say about this guy? He's done everything. He's done everything from the most serious roles to Academy Award winning roles or nominated. He was in The Imitation Game as a Turling. He's going to be in the new Doctor Strange. He is Doctor Strange. he was Khan in the Star Trek, what is it, Star Trek Edge of Tomorrow? into Darkness. He was a slave owner in 12 Years a Slave, playing against Chiwetel Ejiofor, which I'm going to talk about next. And he's in Sherlock at the BBC. My friend said that it's two seasons already. You can see it on Netflix, Sherlock. So Benedict Cumberbatch, yet another amazing actor. Watch some of his non-geeky superhero movies, and then you can talk about it to your snooty friends. Especially 12 Years a Slave. Chiwetel Ejiofor, he floored me in Serenity. If you've never seen Serenity, go watch it just to see Ejiofor's performance. That's it, literally. Just watch that. It'll get you hooked for the next 2 hours. That Serenity is by Joss Whedon, and it's based on the Firefly TV show that lasted for one season. He's also going to be Baron Mordo in Doctor Strange, Ejiofor is. He was also in 12 Years a Slave with the Benedict Cumberbatch. And I don't think he has a British accent. In The Martian, he was the, what was he? He was the NASA, one of the top guys at the NASA, the space program in The Martian with Jeff Daniels and... Matt Damon. So hopefully you go to the website, thedailynight.net, and look at this list, because it's going to be hard for you to keep track of, you know, me blah blah blah, and you know, trying to Google all these names and movies. So, but they're the ones that I have bolded is the ones that I have bolded are the more fun movies, like worth watching. So Tilda Swinton. Now, Tilda Swinton is, wow. If you've never seen Tilda Swinton act before, watch Michael Clayton with what's his name? George Clooney. Michael Clayton. Her character in there is amazing. She has, when she breaks down at the end of the movie, this woman can sell it. And she also does some androgynous roles, and sometimes she plays a guy, and it's amazing. So supposedly in Doctor Strange, she is going to play an androgynous, ethereal being, a non-human. So, and then her other role is in Snowpiercer. I keep recommending this to my friends. Snowpiercer is this post-apocalyptic movie on a train that has the only survivors of Earth traveling in it. And Tilda Swinton is so good in this movie that I didn't even realize it was her until the movie was over. She is such amazing, a different makeup. It didn't hide her face. It's just her mannerisms were different. The way she talked was different. She had false teeth that fall out in the middle of a fight scene. If that doesn't lure you into watching Snowpiercer. And also, Chris Evans is in Snowpiercer. He's the good guy. So it's Chris Evans going after Tilda Swinton. So you got the ethereal one, Tilda Swinton, fighting Captain America in Snowpiercer. So go watch that. Mark Ruffalo. All I got to say is Mark Ruffalo. He replaced Ed Norton as the Hulk and got away with it. And people said he was actually better. How can you do better than Ed freaking Norton? Recommended movies. You've seen him in Avengers and as the Hulk. He was also in Zodiac. That's another kind of a creepy movie, a fact-based movie about the Zodiac killer back in the Bay Area, San Francisco, back in the 70s. Mark Ruffalo is the I think he's a journalist or investigator. Great role. It's a no-nonsense acting role. So again, your snooty acting friends want to say, yeah, you only watch Mark Ruffalo because you watch Avengers. No, I've seen Zodiac and I've seen Collateral. I think his performances on both were varied it had subtle undertones. He was not over the top and he didn't need makeup, and I loved the way he carried himself with his frumpy attire. So, and you have to have your pinky out when you're talking like this. You have to have your pinky out with a little cup of cappuccino, and yeah. Gary Oldman. Should I even say anything about what I'm saying about Gary Oldman? You know him from everything, Batman trilogy, The Professional, The Fifth Element. He's amazing. A different movie that he was in that's fun, The Professional. If you've seen Leon the Professional, Gary Oldman is the main bad guy there, and I love the way Gary Oldman can be both good guy and bad guy, and you both love him and hate him, depending on the movie. That's how good he is. By the way, he's British. He's got a British accent naturally, but he's always playing these American accent characters. And he's also in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. Now, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are the two smaller characters in Hamlet that were sent out. I think they were plotting to kill Hamlet. Yeah, they Hamlet's uncle. Very confusing, these Shakespeare stories. Hamlet's uncle hired Rosencrantz and Guildenstern to on an errand to ultimately kill Hamlet, and you know, it didn't work out. But the comedic version of it is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, and Gary Oldman is one of those guys, either Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. And it's funny scenes. It's more a two guys road trip. Just go and check that out. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. I've listed his other movies. You know, Gary Oldman, Gary Oldman, Gary Oldman. All hail Gary Oldman. So he is Commissioner Gordon in Batman, in the Christopher Nolan Batman. So who is the Batman in Christopher Nolan Batman but Christian Bale? So all these guys, especially the British actors, they're so intermixed with each other. Because guess what? Christian Bale, he's we all know him as Batman, Christopher Nolan Batman. But he was also famous when he was much younger. He was the in Kenneth Branagh's Henry V. This is how it tells you how old the Henry V movie is. It's like 20 years old. Christian Bale was the luggage boy in Henry V, in Branagh's Henry V. There's a famous line, "Kill the boys in luggage," and you know the French, the opposition, the enemy, went and kind of did a no-no during war, and because you're only supposed to fight and kill the soldiers that had weapons so they can fight back. You never were supposed to kill the luggage boys, you know, the little boys that carry stuff to battle, help out the soldiers, because they didn't have weapons, they didn't fight. So the French went, the French flanked the British army and killed the luggage boys, and Christian Bale was one of the luggage boys in Henry V. So there's a great scene at the end of the movie where Kenneth Branagh has to pick up little Christian Bale. Can you imagine Kenneth Branagh? Christian Bale was so tiny. I think he was maybe 10 years old back then. Kenneth Branagh picked him up, his you know, lifeless body in the movie, and walked 2 minutes through the battlefield, and then he set him down on a cart at the end of the movie. Man, talk about a workout. You know, it's so funny. The director of Thor is carrying Batman. So, what is that? My phone is making noises. So, Christian Bale, let's see. Go watch him in American Hustle and American Psycho. So, American Hustle, American Psycho. He's in 310 to Yuma also. If you only see Christian Bale in the Batman movies, you haven't seen 90% of what he's good at in other movies. So, Christian Bale. And finally, Morgan Freeman. We all know him as, what's his name? I'm drawing a blank. Batman trilogy. Morgan Freeman as Lucius Fox. Haha, I didn't have to IMDb that. Morgan Freeman as Lucius Fox in Batman Trilogy. He was also Red in The Shawshank Redemption. One of my top 20 movies, probably. My favorite of all time. And it's always on TV somewhere. Shawshank Redemption. He has that voice where he can be the narrator of whatever. He was the narrator of Shawshank Redemption. He is also the narrator of Million Dollar Baby, the Clint Eastwood, Hilary Swank movie. So if you've never seen Million Dollar Baby, it's got a sad ending. Spoiler alert. Go watch it. And I think it won the Academy Award for Best Movie that year. So he's also the U.S. President in Deep Impact, Morgan Freeman. He's got that gravitas. Yeah, whenever he's on interviews with sort of his people he is familiar with, they always talk about Morgan Freeman's gravitas. He brings gravitas to whatever movie he's in. He was also in Seven with Brad Pitt. And, of course, Unforgiven. Who can forget his role as Clint Eastwood's sidekick in Unforgiven. Oh my goodness. You just keep going. Jet Li's Unleashed. He is the blind piano tuner, piano instructor who takes Jet Li's character in. Another good movie to watch. And Glory. Oh, Glory. With Denzel Washington and Matthew Broderick. Great movies. Whatever I've listed here, I would recommend Shawshank Redemption, the Batman movies, Unforgiven, Glory, and then if you kind of want to get depressed, watch Million Dollar Baby. A movie that's not as strong as it could have been is Deep Impact, where the asteroid hits the Earth. Seven is just dark, so I don't know if you really want to watch that as a Saturday afternoon movie. But Morgan Freeman. All right. We're almost done. Shakespeare movies that won't bore you too much. There's a list. I've been talking about Henry V, Kenneth Branagh. The Big Battle in the End is... This movie was filmed before Braveheart and Lord of the Rings, where you had the big battle of everybody. Henry V was smaller because he didn't have as big a budget, but amazing. You know, we're used to tanks or horses charging each other or jet planes or spaceships. The Henry V battle was just a bunch of guys on one side and a bunch of guys on the other side with swords and spears and shields charging each other. And it was raining and it's muddy and it's dirty and it's bloody. And if you get bored easily, just fast forward to that final battle scene. Actually, fast forward to where Henry V makes his speech. We happy few. You've heard this line spoken in so many movies. What is it? We few, we happy few. The fewer men, the greater share of honor. That phrase is in so many other movies, and it originated from Shakespeare's Henry V. So there. Another thing to tell your snooty friends. We few, we happy few is from Henry V from Shakespeare. So kind of a more boring movie because it's like 3 hours long, but it's grand, is Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet. Huge spectacle of a movie, kind of long, 3 hours long, but it's a good... if you like Henry V, go watch Hamlet. And then a shorter movie, I think it's only an hour and 45 minutes, is Much Ado About Nothing. And it's funny, lighthearted comedy with Denzel Washington. Again, Kenneth Branagh directed it. And then I'm going to add Othello in here. Othello was probably the darkest out of the Branagh movies. A lot of murder and stuff. Like, kind of Game of Thronesy, you know? Othello with Lawrence Fishburne and Kenneth Branagh. And then a non-Branagh Shakespeare movie that you might be interested in is Looking for Richard with Al Pacino. it's sort of like behind the scenes on how he produced the Richard III play for Broadway. And it kind of takes you behind the scenes. You see the nuts and bolts of it. You see him talking to the actors. It's sort of a pseudo-documentary, which is kind of cool. It's Al Pacino, so you can't really go wrong. And then, of course, the Sir Ian McKellen's Richard III, the Nazi-era adaptation of Richard III. I know DiCaprio had the Romeo and Juliet movie that a lot of the girls like, but I kind of got... To me, it was too far removed from what my take on Shakespeare's. I think it was a good like heartthrob, you know, Tiger Beat 16 magazine movie, the DiCaprio's Romeo and Juliet. But it's kind of over the top. Too many, you know, flashy guns, shooting, fighting gangster. You know, but you might like it. So now the last. Next to the last part is Merchant Ivory type movies that won't bore you. There's a whole bunch of them that are boring. Whole bunch of them. 90% of them are boring. That's my personal opinion. If I had more time on my hands, I would probably sit through them. But if I can only recommend three movies that hopefully won't bore you too much, the most boring of these three, I would say, is Remains of the Day with Christopher Reeve and Anthony Hopkins and Emma Thompson. The Remains of the Day. It won awards. I think it won the Academy Award for Best Movie. The other one is Sense and Sensibility. I've been talking about that over and over with Alan Rickman, Kate Winslet, Emma Thompson, and Hugh Grant. And finally, probably the least boring out of these talky-talky acting movies is The King's Speech with Colin Firth, who did, I think he won the Best Actor and it won the Best Movie of that year, The King's Speech about what's his name? It's King Edward. This is fact-based. It's based on what really happened. And King Edward had a speech impediment. And if you have a speech impediment and you are the figurehead of a country and you have to make speeches, you don't want your country to sound weak or stumbling. So you have to take lessons to make yourself more royalty and, you know, more, you sound more like you know what you're doing instead of stumbling through your words like I'm doing right now. So that is with The King's Speech is with Colin Firth and Jeffrey Rush. I can't believe I forgot him. Jeffrey Rush is another great actor. So, that's it. And then finally, if you don't take anything else from this whole great acting idea of Shakespeare with great acting, with Merchant Ivory, with all these non-superhero geeky genre films, there is Gandalf's speech in the middle of Return of the King. And I love... That was the moment of the trilogy for me. It encompassed the heart of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Is when he, they were the orcs, the bad guys were about to break down the gates, and Gandalf was sitting. Is it with Merry or Pippin? The Hobbit was afraid to die. And Gandalf says, "No, the journey doesn't end here. Death is just another path, one that we all must take. The gray rain curtain of this world rolls back and all turns to silver glass, and then you see it. White shores and beyond, a far green country under a swift sunrise." What more can you say? So thank you for listening. Thank you for putting up with me. It has been an hour and a half. This is the longest podcast I've done so far. Thank you for listening to me this far. And to rest in peace, David Bowie. Rest in peace, Alan Rickman. Thank you for listening. May the force be with you. Thank you.
Non nobis Domine, Domine. Oh.